Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the Ball 5 podcast, the podcast where we're both sad about the Mets. I'm DJ Lopes. I'm joined by Chris Lopes. Chris, I guess I don't have to ask how you're doing because I outlined it just now, but how you doing?
I'm in mourning, yeah. I don't feel great. I'm going to go on a vow of silence for the rest of this episode.
Well, that's terrible news for me. As much as I love to talk, I don't love to talk that much, but I guess we do have to talk about it to some extent. The Mets did lose in the wild card series. They lost in 3 games to the San Diego Padres. We might go brief on the other wild card series. Let's outline them right now just so we don't have to get into it. So other wild card series, they were fun. We had the Phillies and the Cardinals. Phillies swept in 2 games. The first game was kind of up until the 9th inning when Philly erupted and scored 6 runs off an injured Ryan Helsley. To win that one. And then Aaron Nola dominated. Bryce Harper hit a 2-run homer. And that was all it for St. Louis in that series. Toronto-Seattle was really, really cool. Really, really fun. 2 exciting teams. Toronto got out to a big lead in game 2. Couldn't hold on to it. That was actually crazy to watch. We were unable to watch it directly because we were at Mets game 2. But just following it and seeing them slowly and slowly blow an 8-1 lead was insane. Robbie Ray laid a dud. Toronto's bullpen had a complete implosion, and Seattle got to move on. And then lastly, 4 runs were scored in the entirety of Guardians Rays.
The biggest thing that I want to mention about all 3 of these will be with the Guardians Rays game, where that last game that went 15 innings had a runtime of 4 hours and 51 minutes. The New York Metropolitans game that we went to on Saturday had a runtime of 4 hours and 15 minutes, and it was a regulation 9-inning game. So just goes to show that endings are arbitrary, and maybe putting the runner on second in extras isn't a bad thing. I don't know if that's crazy to say.
I think that might have actually been my takeaway from the series, was that Rob Manfred should actually look towards keeping the runner on second rule, just because, man, those 2 offenses, and it's not necessarily a 2 offenses thing. They were 2 weak offenses, but also they were 2 incredibly strong pitching staffs. So there was that. And I just think that I mentioned this to you while we were listening to it on the way up. It was just like, do any of these guys actually score a run while this game is in extras when they can't have the benefit of having the runner on second?
It seemed impossible. I thought we were going to get a position player pitching. It seemed impossible. It seemed that they wouldn't get anyone in there. And it just didn't seem like it was going to work. And it's funny because I am one that is not super in favor of the runner on second rule. I always thought it was like, I'll just let these teams duke it out and get the guys going. But now after it was almost after that game, I realized, well, you know, there's some incentive to not let it get to extras, you know, and I think that that's a good thing to have, is just to have that incentive to really go for it in the late innings. And if you're the home team, you know, maybe you're just like, okay, well, at least we'll have last chance, you know, so maybe we can kind of, you know, play around with things. But I think it actually brings an interesting element to the game. So maybe it'll come back. I don't know.
Yeah. And one note that I had on this was that Oscar Gonzalez, the guy that did hit the walk-off home run at the very end, in the 15th inning of game 2, his walk-up song is, as many people have noted, the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song. So it was very funny to have a big, you know, multiple big playoff moments so far in that game in extras when he came up to bat be scored by the opening of the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song. So that was actually really cool to fun. I think it kind of underscores just how young that Cleveland team is in a funny way. The fact that they have guys that like grew up watching SpongeBob and stuff like that. Some people that are like my age, essentially, which is terrifying to think of, that they are hitting walk-off home runs in the wild card. And I'm recording a podcast in my living room. But we won't get into that too much. Time to get into another really sad thing. I guess we've been avoiding it for about 5 minutes right now to talk about the other series, but yeah, the Mets. So my first note on this was, man, this shit sucks, because it did. And I think the major thing about it was that there was so much talk around the Mets. The major theme about the Mets heading into this playoffs and heading into the season and all that were, wow, in a 3-game playoff series and a 4-game, 5-game playoff series, how do you beat Scherzer, DeGrom, Bassett 2 times in 3 games? And the exact reason they lost in the playoffs was because somebody beat Scherzer, DeGrom, and Bassett 2 times in 3 games. And I don't really think it was any, well, I mean, part of it can be laid on the offense, but like, it wasn't really the bullpen, which everybody thought, a lot of Mets fans thought, would be the thing that did them in. It was just Scherzer wasn't there that day. Scherzer laid a dud, and some of the hits in the big inning he gave up were a little iffy, but still, you know, a Scherzer that maybe is less hampered by his delivery and injuries and age maybe gets out of that inning pretty easily. Whereas the Scherzer gives up 7 runs in an outing. And then Bassett, I don't think the line was as bad as far as the runs given up, but he just, same thing as in Atlanta. He just didn't have it. His control wasn't there. He was walking guys. He was pitching around Trent Grisham, which we'll have to get into in our later Padres series recaps, but he was pitching around Trent Grisham. He was pitching around Ha-Sung Kim. He couldn't attack directly to Austin Nola to get him out. And the moment Austin Nola hit that single to drive in two, that was the moment I was like, I guess this is over. I don't see what's happening, that they're going to be able to contain this offense and that they're going to be able to score on top of that. So,
yeah, I mean, this was hard. This was tough. I've never had a series affect me so much personally, you know. I was on like a baseball hiatus for, I would say, you know, the past 3-4 days at least. You know, it's been rough to know that we're just not going to see Mets baseball in a year that I thought that they were really going to go far. I mean, they were my World Series pick, you know. So just the fact that they couldn't do this, and it really seemed like there was just a lack of urgency, that there wasn't, you know, it really seemed like almost once the pitching really slowed down that they were demoralized to an effect, you know, and that we couldn't just do anything about it. And that was what really got me. Maybe the Mets players feel like the Mets fans normally do.
Maybe they're also doing the, oh my God, again, this can't keep happening, guys. Yeah. Which is basically how I felt for just the whole series. Like, I know that I haven't been a Mets fan for this whole entire time. You know, this whole entire, you know, I never really saw, like, Davis. I never really saw, you know, the early 2000s, the 90s Mets. But even then, in my relatively short time as a Mets fan, I've seen so much stuff that it's just like, is this just like what happens? Is there any way that this team can just get over itself essentially and move on? And I think that the answer is probably money. I think that the answer is probably going to have to be money. But yeah, it was just one of those things watching the series that it felt inevitable in a way that things haven't quite felt inevitable in a while for this team. Maybe the entire month of September stuff kind of felt like this, but just in general, it felt inevitable in a way that just didn't typically feel that way for a while. But I guess this kind of underscores the big theme of how does this team bounce back from this. You have a lot of stuff that might have to be worked on, and a big offseason. This is maybe the biggest offseason in at least recent Mets memory, but potentially all of Mets memory. You have DeGrom, who has stated multiple times that he's going to opt out and try to renegotiate a deal. I think that he's going to give Mets the favor in that deal, but you know, he could be swayed to be closer to home. He could be swayed by, I don't think he's going to be swayed by money, because I don't think that a guy like Steve Cohen will let a guy like Jacob DeGrom just walk without even giving up a fight. But on top of that, you have Edwin Diaz, who could be gone. You have Chris Bassett has an option on his contract. I believe it's a mutual option. Taiwan Walker could be gone, but I think that's actually a player option, so he might take that. Brandon Nimmo is a free agent. Just basically everybody in your bullpen, but like Drew Smith is going to be up in the air. And I don't know how you handle that. I don't know how Billy Epler plans to handle that. So it's going to be really curious to see how they go about this.
Yeah, I have no idea. And it also looks as if the MLB as a whole has some really like big, obviously, names as free agents, you know, but I don't know, too, because you could go for the pie in the sky situations. You know, you could go, we re-sign DeGrom, Diaz, we get Aaron Judge, you know, like you could do all of these things. I understand, and maybe this is my thing where dealing with the Wilpons for so long and not, you know, I know that we had Cohen last offseason and getting Scherzer and doing those things, but, you know, to it's really difficult for me to think that we can commit all of this money to an Aaron Judge and a DeGrom and then, you know, move forward and fix a bullpen and do all this stuff. I feel like I'm nervous because there are just so many question marks and I don't know about the internal promotions that we have for those question marks. I don't really think that we have any pitching in the wings that are going to help us, you know, kind of get through these, you know, if people walk. I keep hearing words that, you know, and again, this is my fault for following people like Andy Martino and stuff like that, but you keep hearing the things that DeGrom is pretty unhappy and that he's willing to take less money to play somewhere else. You keep hearing all these things that they're saying, oh, well, like contingency plans for DeGrom, and I hate seeing those. Although the biggest contingency plan that I've seen is the Mets trading for Shohei. I don't know how that even works. Like, I don't even know if the Mets have people to get that done. You know, I know you have Alvarez and Vientos and stuff like that, but it's going to take your whole team. I don't know if the Mets have people to get that done. You know, so it's going to be a very interesting offseason. And it's difficult to say that, you know, oh, yeah, the Mets need to win next year, you know, but I almost feel like the Mets do need to show some sustained ability to sustain, you know, success. And I know that we got bounced in the wild card. You have to look at this season as a success, I guess, as a disappointing success. You know, we did win 101 games. I wonder how much the difficult games down the stretch really played into this, you know, blow up. I think it's hard to pin it on that. But we also were playing very high leverage games up until the end of the season, you know. So I'm really wondering if that had anything to do with this. I think overall you do play this as a successful season with a supremely disappointing end. And this offseason is going to say a lot. I don't know how they're going to bounce back from this.
Yeah, I think that there needs to be some form of perspective on it where you can say two things, that the way that it ended was incredibly disappointing and that it's something that is going to be, gets brought up over the fact that they won 101 games this season. It's kind of the big thing with the you know, mid to late 90s Chicago Bulls. They had that belief that it ain't no thing if you don't get that ring. So I think that that's kind of where a lot of discourse has gone, and that's just where kind of the state of discourse in general in sports, but also that's kind of how your season is going to be remembered by everybody else. So I think it's on to you at that point to try to remember it for the good stuff. But I guess that goes counter to my point that I'm going to wrap it up with, which is just the dude that said, is it really better? The dude that said it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. I think he's a dumbass. This sucked. I've texted this to you during the Atlanta series when everything was falling apart. And during the playoffs, I was like, I think I'd rather be a fan of like an exciting 82 win team. I think I'd rather be in the perpetual state of, oh, next year might be really good, than, oh, next year we might lose all of our good players and then have to rebuild, and then all of a sudden we've gone from 101 wins to back to where we were.
Yeah, that's been the thing. I mean, the past few years have been, hey, you know, we kind of lucked into a World Series in 15, you know, and like maybe we can get back there, and we had some fun people to watch. I mean, you have, in kind of a wash season, you have the whole Pete Alonso chase, and you have all of these things where there are some really cool people to watch, and you're watching Brandon Nimmo kind of grow into a very good center fielder in front of your eyes, and you're watching all of these things that are really, really, really awesome to see in this team, while also this team sucks. And that's like fun though to watch. But then when the team's good and then the team crashes like that, then you're left wondering, well, what the hell do I do now? You know? So I don't know. Let's cross our fingers, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess that does it for our Mets therapy session. And we should move on now to the baseball for teams that have actually won their series and got to move on and did well enough in the regular season to move on and not have a bye. I mean, and have a bye into this division series, because the division series heading into this weekend, we have, on the time of recording, this is Saturday morning, which you could probably hear in our voices. This is Saturday morning. We're trying to get this out before the games start at 2 p.m. So I think I can do it. Wish me luck there. But yeah, I guess we'll start with a game that's going to be the leadoff of that four game Saturday, which a lot of these series have been three games in. Only one is two games in, the Yankees-Guardians series, because of the rainout. But so the first series that is three games in, actually, no, changed my mind on that. Seattle and Houston are not into three games yet. But regardless, back to Atlanta and Philly. This series has actually been kind of fun. I know you probably definitely haven't watched this because it's a series between two NL East teams right off of our NL East team getting deposited. But this has actually been a really fun series. So in game one in Atlanta, it was a 1:07 p.m. start time, which I guess we can get into this. The fact that it's kind of hard to watch all of these games, and we are going to deliver some analysis on these games, but it is kind of hard to watch them when they start at the times that they do. This is a playoff game starting at 1:07 on a Tuesday, when pretty much everybody that's not going to be actively going to the game or actively a Braves or Phillies fan probably has work. And even those fans that aren't going to the game have work. And you have fans that the only people that are basically getting out of work are the people that are going to the game. And if you're not going to the game, you probably have work at that time. So it was just, it's just been tough to watch all of these games at, when they start. But also the flip side of that is, I don't know, I don't think you can really grow the game with 4:00, 8:30 p.m. start times, which is kind of the tough situation you find yourself in. You could either have a lot of baseball at once and people who are big fans of the teams are going to watch them, but people who are more casual fans, they won't know who to pick. They can't watch all of it, obviously. So they're just going to pick one and then roll with it. And then all of a sudden they might catch a bad series, and that colors their opinion on baseball. But this also does not seem like a great idea either, because unless it's this Saturday where there's four games, you don't get a lot of, entertainment value. You don't get a lot of people that are going to sit in for all four games, but enough of that. Back to game one. Philly kind of pounces on Max Fried. They score 7 runs in 5 innings, all 7 of the runs in 5 innings. And it was, I think the big thing was that Nick Castellanos finally showed up. Castellanos has been pretty bad this year so far. And he, in OPS, I believe, was under 700, was kind of struggling too in that wild card series heading into this game, but he goes 3-for-5 with 3 RBIs, and even in game 3 had another RBI single, 2 RBI single. So really finally putting stuff together has been huge for Philly in the series, because that offense has really, I guess in the sense, blossomed around that Nick Castellanos breakout, as well as Bryce Harper just being an absolute beast in this series so far. I think he's like 5-for-10, 5-for-9 with a couple doubles and a home run. He's been absolutely incredible, but they pull out that game 7-6, got a little hairy at the end when Matt Olson hit a 3-run shot to make it a 1-run game, but Nick Castellanos, once again, terrible outfielder, makes a great diving catch. Yeah. And it's one of those catches that, like, maybe a Gold Glover makes that look a lot smoother, or maybe doesn't even have to dive.
Probably.
Nick Castellanos, obviously, we know, is not the greatest defender, so he's kind of all over the place, sliding and sticking his arm out, way out, and getting a glove on it. And those catches are always fun to watch when you watch someone that struggles with defense be able to finally break through and make a big catch like that. And then in game two, it was kind of a more quiet one. I believe Atlanta does all of their scoring in one inning. They score, 3 in the sixth, and it wasn't on a lot. It was a ball that maybe Reese Hoskins should have made a play on, and then there was a little dribbler that scores a run that Philly didn't have a play on. And then they kind of just compounded that. And Kyle Wright was great. The bullpen was great. Kenley Jansen, shut it down, only faced 3 batters, struck out a batter, and got the save. So it kind of felt like maybe Atlanta was over that, maybe a 1-game hangover. They had the long layoff, and then now they're kind of starting to pick it back up again. But then you hit game 3, and this one is a little, I guess, weird in the sense that it had Spencer Strider making his return from the IL, and we saw it. He did not look ready. I guess as ready as he could have been for about 2 innings. They only said he was going to go about 2-3 innings, but in that 3rd inning, he really started faltering. He let a couple guys on and then threw a 94-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle to Reese Hoskins. And if you're Spencer Strider sitting 98, 99, and you throw 98, 94 to someone, it doesn't matter who that is. That could have been the pitcher up to bat, and he was probably going to hit a rope there. And it was Reese Hoskins who finally had his playoff moment, hit a 3-run shot, and then Bryce Harper hits a 2-run shot there. Bryce Harper gets an RBI double later on in the game, and then Nick Castellanos, once again, like I said earlier, hits that 2-run single, and you have a 9-1 game. Aaron Nola was, once again, absolutely nails in this game, like he has been all playoffs, just shutting down this team. So I think that this series, like I said, you might not have been watching it too much because of the wounds still being fresh, but it's been pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I've followed along here and there. Again, I haven't watched a full game because of the fresh wounds, but I think I'm ready now. It's really good. And I think, you kind of mentioned it. Snitker even kind of came out and said it. I do really wonder what the buy, if that does negatively affect a team, and I think you can hear it in a lot of different sports, complaining about, sometimes the buy does give you too much time to think, and sometimes you need that momentum that you were garnering the past few weeks of the last few weeks of the season. I think baseball, for at least me, I know myself, is a very momentum based game. It's difficult to take a break and then jump right into it. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that does have something to do with it. It does showcase that this series does showcase the weirdness in a 5-game best of 5 game thing. But also there's a very weird thing about best of 3 that we just saw with the wild card. So I don't really know my thoughts on those. I don't really know how you fix it. Same with game times. I don't really know how you fix it either. I feel like this is the best situation for game times, because I think ultimately you want people to not make decisions between games. You want them to be able to watch things, but like you said, timing is just rough, so I don't really know what to do there. Ultimately, it's been interesting to see Phillies really come out on this one, and it's we were talking about it off to the side. I don't know who the hell you root for here. I think you root for the Phillies, but you don't really want the Phillies to win either, so I think it's just lesser of two evils here, and I'm glad the Phillies are hitting the Braves like this, and I hope that they can finish it off today.
Yeah, I mentioned it on the last pod, my deep respect for Philadelphia. And I think it was because, so last year, the Mets were once again really disappointing, had the lead in the division and lost it to, this time was the Phillies, but then the Braves came back and got that. So in that last year, I was kind of saying like, okay, I don't want the Phillies to make the playoffs and break their drought on a time where the Mets don't also make the playoffs. So I didn't want them to get in. So I kind of wanted, in a sense, as much as you could want a team like that and breaking through, I kind of wanted the Braves to win the division and get in. Little did I know that the monkey's paw would curl and they would end up winning the World Series. But now that has completely flipped because now the Phillies are just the team with the drought trying to take down the defending champions. And I still think that it's fun. I think that as a baseball fan, just in general, you look at a situation like that and you want to watch something like that because it is so fun and the vibes have been so high. Citizens Bank Ballpark was absolutely rocking. And I know it's like super cliche just to say that something was rocking, but like it was next level there. You could tell that this is a team that hasn't had a playoff game there in a while because it was so loud on the Reese homer. It was so loud on the Bryce homer. It was so loud. It was just great. It's such a hostile place to be in, especially because not only are you dealing with that many people, they're all Philadelphians. So I guess there's that too. But you mentioned something about momentum, and I guess I'll use this to transfer into the other series in the NL because I was watching the Dodgers-Padres series, and AJ Pierzynski before it, when he was talking about how loud the Padres fans were, and they, to their credit, also haven't hosted a playoff game in front of fans since 2008, so that place was really loud too. He mentioned the fact that you can't quantify momentum, but then mentioned how the crowd really explains it, and I was like, so you still can't quantify momentum because there's no number here that you can ascribe to there being momentum being added by how loud this crowd is. So that's probably way too pedantic for me, but I just listened to that and I was like, I don't think you proved your point in that statement.
No baseball announcer proves their point. I think you realize that when you start watching these more globally broadcasted games, they're just not great.
Yeah. So, and it's a shame that they're basically the only other option we have unless you want to mute it and then listen to the home broadcast on radio, which probably should be what you do, to be honest. Maybe I should start doing that. I might actually think about doing that. But
there's a lag. It's tough.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I guess we're going to now go into the Dodgers-Padres series, which I think, and, you know, I think this goes back to what I said in last podcast. Whoever won that Mets-Padres series was going to have a really fun series with the Dodgers. And so far to this point, it has been a really fun series with the Dodgers. In game one, the Dodgers come out 5-3, come out on top 5-3. In game two, Padres win 5-3. They flip it back on them. And then game three was a really, really entertaining one, really close one. It ends 2-1 with a Padres win, and I'm a little glad we decided to record now instead of last night during the game because we kind of would have missed talking about this game. It was a really good one. Like we said, the first home game that the Padres have hosted in front of fans since 2008, so that place was rocking. Blake Snell against the Dodgers for the first time since the 2012, well, not the first time in general, but the first time in the playoffs since the 2020 World Series. And I found it funny because he kind of had the same exact start where it was like really good, but slightly inefficient. And in both starts, he got pulled after 5 1/3 innings. So I guess he didn't fully overcome his demons in that game, but they made up for it because instead of bringing out Nick Anderson, who immediately squandered the game and squandered the lead and lost the World Series, they instead brought out Nick Martinez, who shut down the inning, kept their bats in check. And this bullpen for San Diego has been lights out during this series. They really have not allowed much. I think that they've only allowed like maybe one or two runs so far in this entire series. And those were in games that they ended up winning. So they mentioned it on the broadcast, I believe, up until like the middle point of game two, the last person to get a hit on the Padres bullpen was Tomas Nido. And they had just continued to be lights out. Robert Suarez was great. Nick Martinez was pretty solid. Once again, just a really great bullpen effort from this Padres team to keep this series close. And now they have the lead. And this is scary territory for the Dodgers. The Dodgers now go back into San Diego, down 2-1. They need to win two to even move on to the next round. And instead of facing, like in a similar situation right now with the Braves, how they're going in to face Noah Syndergaard, who's their starter for Philly. Instead, the Dodgers go ahead and get to face Joe Musgrove, who we saw has been on an absolute tear to end the season. I think he's only allowed like one or two earned runs in the entire last month of the season, whether or not it's because he's putting icy hot on his ears to actually make him locked in. That remains to be seen. I think that that's just a case of pitchers being absolute weirdos. But regardless, he's been absolutely insane this postseason so far and this last month or so. So I really don't know what the Dodgers do in this situation. Their offense has been struggling.
Yeah, and San Diego is doing what they did against the Mets. You know, for all of, you know, obviously my complaints and annoyances with the Mets series, San Diego kind of just hit top to bottom, you know, and I
especially the bottom.
Yes, especially the bottom. And they're continuing to do it here. You know, you're still getting great plays from your Grishams and Nolas and stuff like that. And I don't know. I just think that's a really good thing to have, obviously, your whole team. I don't think that's a controversial opinion there, but to have your whole team hitting, you know, it's just one of those things where, yeah, the Dodgers have to be worried here. And I almost would rather San Diego win here because then it would make me feel like, okay, it's not just a fluke. Maybe the Mets, you know, like it would almost vindicate the Mets series for me. Not really, but it would almost. More so, it makes me feel like, well, fuck, we could have beaten the Dodgers, you know. But anyways, good there. And I know we talked about it. It feels like the elephant in the room. I don't know what Grisham's doing. He's taking at bats. He's hitting the ball hard. He's scoring the big runs. He's making defensive plays. You know, all this to say about his bat, he had a few balls in the Met series that I don't think a good center fielder catches, like a worse center fielder catches, and he gets to him with ease. And they were really big momentum savers too. So I don't know. I think Grisham's really, really, really circling in on this playoffs right now. And it's almost like it's like a mea culpa for, you know, his error with the Brewers a few years back. Like, it's like him just coming back and saying, hey, I'm going to contribute to this team that I helped get further to. Maybe he's always been a Padres double agent here.
I think that that's what it is. I do think that that's actually what it is, that he had this big, you know, moment that really tore him down in a sense, where he misses that play that was, it's kind of funny looking back on it, because you have Josh Hader pitching to Juan Soto, who hits it to Trent Grisham. All now are on the same 2022 Padres, which is just kind of the funny way that baseball works, where you get these situations. And he's been making the most of it. He has 3 home runs so far. I don't think anybody even has more. I saw it. That's the most so far of any player in the playoffs right now. And they're not gimmies. He's not hitting them just over the wall. He absolutely hammered one against Scherzer. We couldn't really see it because we were there. Slight flex. But the one he hit on DeGrom was just insane. DeGrom made the exact pitch he wanted to make. Fastball diving low and away. And Grisham just flicked it, no problem, into the left center field bleachers. And then even in this game, he went lefty-lefty off Andrew Heaney, who is a flyball pitcher, but still, he absolutely clobbered that one. That one was a total no-doubter, and that was the difference. It was 1-1 at that point, brings them up 2-1, and then they hold on to win 2-1. So I think that that was really huge, really exciting. And to be honest, as upset as I was with him for what he did to my favorite team, I think at this point I've kind of circled back around to being happy for him, because I can't imagine what it's like to have something like that happen to you. I've had it happen on much lower scales in like all-star tournaments in youth baseball, but I can't imagine what it's like to have that happen on the national TV, on the big stage, and then it just gets worse and worse and worse when you realize you could have beaten this team that went on to win the World Series. So I think that it's been absolutely amazing to see what Trent Grisham has been able to do to overcome those struggles and now completely thrive. And we saw a little bit of it in 2020 where he was really, really solid. He was injured and just kind of okay in 2021. And then this year in 2022, he was just outright bad during the season. But none of that matters if you go out in the playoffs and do what you're doing as Trent Grisham. He's always been an elite defensive outfielder, which is funny. I mean, not necessarily funny, given that his one real highlight before that was that miscue. But in general, he's just been a really amazing defensive outfielder, and he's showed that. He's made that consistent while also bringing the bat along. So I think that that's been the big X factor of this playoff run. And if they make it any further, it's going to continue being the big X factor of this playoff run. It's the, I don't want to, you know, overassume at this point, especially because we don't even know if they're going to make it out of the division series, but it feels like the Daniel Murphy in 2015 finding a power stroke and all of a sudden hitting all these home runs off of great pitchers. It feels like the Randy Arozarena in 2020 just catching lightning in a bottle. He's still a very good player, but essentially catching lightning in a bottle, hitting like 8 or 9 home runs in a playoff run against all really good teams and really good pitching. And not even really, I think my favorite part about that run from Randy was he wasn't even really pulling the ball a lot. It was a lot to dead center. It was a lot to the power alleys. And that was just a really impressive run. And we could be seeing the beginnings of it if they make it onto the AL, to the NLCS. We could be seeing that continue. And I don't know. I'm really happy for Trent Grisham. I think this goes back to LA. I think we get Julio Urias versus, I believe it was Clevinger that started that game one, but I don't think they're going to go with Clevinger. They might go with Darvish on short rest in game 5. But I do think that the Dodgers are not a team that should go down lightly. They won 110, 111 games for a reason. They shouldn't go down lightly in this. It'll be, I can't imagine what Twitter's going to be if they don't, but yeah, I think this goes back to LA. Whether or not it comes back to LA and stays in LA because they go on to the NLCS, I still don't have any clue.
No idea. The only other thing I want to say about it is Trent Grisham's 25. It's crazy to think that, like, you know, you make all these, you know, assumptions based on the fact that you have your Juan Sotos and you have Mike Trouts who blossomed at a really young age, and it's weird to say, hey, this kid's been in this league for a few years and he's only 25. Like, maybe he's just catching his stride, you know. So I don't know what's good. I don't know what to do with this series. Padres look really good.
Yeah, that could definitely be the case about Grisham. And before we moved on to the AL series, I just wanted to go back to Braves-Phillies because we didn't really give a take on that, on the future of that series. Game 4 today is going to be Charlie Morton versus Noah Syndergaard. I don't know too much about how that pitching matchup is going to go. Charlie Morton kind of struggled this year, but is also Charlie Morton. He's a great playoff pitcher. So I wonder if we're going to get a completely new Charlie Morton, if we're going to get the same Charlie Morton we've had all year. Whereas Noah Syndergaard is, I don't know, man. He's just kind of not the pitcher he was a couple years ago. All those injuries have really did a number on him. He doesn't really miss a lot of bats at all, which is a concerning thing for this Braves team, who, when they make contact, makes a lot of really hard contact, hits a lot of home runs. That's a little concerning. They strike out a lot. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys. It's kind of like unstoppable force meets a movable object, but not like in that they're both really good at something. It's that they're both really bad at one thing. So I don't know. I think that if this series goes back to Atlanta, Atlanta's absolutely winning it. I don't think you'll give Max Fried 2 starts in one playoff series and he's going to lay down 2 duds. That's just not something that's going to happen to a guy like Max Fried. But I think, obviously, if it doesn't get out of of Philly, it means that Philly won it. But if it does get back to Atlanta, I think that Atlanta is going to win that series and move on to the NLCS.
Yeah, that's it's a tough one to say. I find it difficult to think that Syndergaard's going to go out there and really shove today. I don't know. But we'll see. I mean, I think I really want the Phillies to win and then get bounced. I don't freaking know. I don't know what to think about this. I think that it does, if it does go back to Atlanta, I do think that you can't let Atlanta get hot. You know, so the Phillies really have to treat this game as a must win almost. So I think, honestly, you're going to see a 2-3 inning start from Syndergaard no matter what. And then they're going to give it to the pen.
Yeah, I think that's the thing when you have a lot of options is that you just end up piecemealing a game together. They still have Bailey Falter. I don't think you want to turn to Kyle Gibson in a series anymore. He's maybe pitched his last inning for Philly. So I don't think you go to him, but you probably piggyback some form of Syndergaard and Bailey Falter and try to ride that out. But enough for the NL. We're going to move on to the AL for this last bit of the pod. And I think we're going to, whereas we started with the Guardians series, whereas we started with the Mariners series and ended with the Guardians series in the wildcard preview, we're going to flip that around, start with the Mariners series in this one, and then go to the Guardian series later, because holy shit, Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah. It's insane to watch that home run. And I think, like, it's encapsulated. I was watching some videos of it, and there was a kid that was, like, bawling his eyes out that the Astros were losing, which also, fuck that kid. He doesn't know heartbreak. The kid was like 10. So yes, I'm saying, F a 10-year-old kid here. But
also not, because he's a kid and kids are allowed to feel these emotions and go through this stuff with their favorite sports teams.
Don't do this to me. anyways, he's sitting there crying, and then you just, it super cuts to Yordan hitting that just absolute bomb and just the emotion coming off of it with the bat flip and stuff like that. It was so cool. I don't know what the Mariners were doing there. I know you wanted a lefty arm, but it doesn't feel like Ray was the choice there. So I don't know. This has been really electric, and the Mariners, really fun season. I'm not going to say it's done yet, but it doesn't look good, you know. I think Astros sweep this one. I don't see the Mariners putting anything together here.
Yeah, I said that it's the most out pitch that's ever been hit out in the history of hitting a ball out. Essentially, that Robbie Ray pitch, because sure, you can go to Robbie Ray in that situation. I don't agree with it, but you definitely can't go with him if he's gonna give Yordan Alvarez 92 miles an hour with no movement whatsoever right down the middle. Anybody could have thrown that. Well, I mean, obviously not anybody could have thrown 92, but anybody could have thrown that pitch. He was going to hit that thing out. And that was the big thing about it. They had gotten this big lead. They really touched up Justin Verlander, and you thought that was going to be the story of, you know, this Seattle team is going to go off right now, and they're going to continue building off of the momentum of that big win that they had against Toronto. And then all of a sudden, Houston just kind of feels inevitable. Their offense just kind of feels inevitable. They start creeping back into the game. Yuli Gurriel hits a home run. They start putting some stuff together. And then all of a sudden, the ninth inning comes. They're down. They're up two. Paul Sewald comes in. And Sewald, along with Ray, has also been kind of rough in the postseason. He gave up the other runs that Robbie Ray didn't give up in that 8-1 when that game got to 8-1 in Toronto. So he's been kind of rough so far in this postseason, and he struggled. He got a little too cute pitching to a guy named David Hensley, who I watch a lot of baseball. I can tell you that much. I've never heard of David Hensley in my life. He got too cute pitching around to David Hensley and then let him get on base. He still got Jose Altuve out, which was cool, but then still with two outs, you're unable to shut the door, and Jeremy Pena loops a single into center field. And when I saw Pena hit that single into center field, I was like, oh, this is over. This is just like too – the script writers planned it out a little too much in that game, because it was – the moment you saw Robbie Ray warming up in the pen, you kind of knew like, oh, this is going to be a big thing either way. Either he's going to strike out Yordan immediately or Yordan's just going to hit an absolute tank, and it was the latter. And then to top it off, in game two of the series, it's the same thing where – the Mariners don't play a bad game, but they play less of a complete game than they did in game one. And Luis Castillo's balling. Luis Castillo is, he's been phenomenal this playoff so far, but he throws a nasty pitch to Yordan again. 98 sinker tailing away from him into the other batter's box at that point. Well, not at that point, but you know, tailing into the other batter's box, and Yordan just flick of the wrist, just flicks it right into the Crawford boxes. And I don't think that was a home run that was aided by the Crawford boxes. It's probably out of any other stadium, but that just goes to show his strength and his talent. And he's just one of the best hitters we've seen in the game so far, period. I've been a big believer that Juan Soto is the best hitter in all of baseball, just pure talent-wise. Yordan could be creeping up on that just because he brings a lot of what Soto brings, maybe not that elite plate discipline, but just that ability to hit any pitch anywhere, wherever he wants. But he also brings on top of that just this pure unmitigated power that Soto has a bit of, but it's more, you know, he's not aiming to hit home runs, but he can get around on one. And that leads to, you know, hitting 25 to 35 homers a year. Yordan Alvarez has that swing that just generates so much power behind it. And that's what leads to him hitting, you know, 35, 40 home runs a year, even in a season where he missed, like, you know, something like 20 games or something like that.
Yeah, and you know, if you wanna segue into an MVP candidate that is struggling here, you know, you have Yordan that's really putting the Astros on his back and carrying, and then you have Aaron Judge that is very much struggling right now. So I don't know.
They were booing him in game two.
That's, yeah, that's kind of nuts. That is nuts.
I get it. He's been having a rough series against a really good pitching team, but they've been booing Aaron Judge. They were booing pitchers for not pitching to Judge, and now guys are pitching to him. He's struggling a little bit. They're booing him. I don't pretend to be this like moral authority on whether you should be able to boo people or not. I just generally don't believe in it. I don't want to boo people a ton. Unless it's like booing another team's player because you want to have fun with the crowd. I'm not the biggest guy on booing your own guys, but that's just next level. Like, what are you doing? And I get it. It's Yankees fans and they're going to play up the whole, you know, you can't play in New York. You know, if you want to play in New York, you got to be able to deal with us. But I don't know. At some point, you hit 62 home runs and are lauded as the next big thing, as essentially like a god in New York. You should get a little bit of grace period for striking out against a former Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah, maybe he can, you know, come play for the other New York team. I don't know.
We'll treat him better. I mean, well, we booed Max Scherzer, we won't treat him better. But before we get into the Yankees Guardian series, just wrapping up, Mariners Houston, I am really excited to see what Seattle looks like today. I'm really pumped for that. I think that's going to be great. I'm going to double check really quickly who's the pitching matchup in that game. They're going to go with George Kirby against Lance McCullers, which is exciting. You get two rookies pitching in one series against one of the best offensive teams we've seen in recent years. That's very fun. And Kirby, to his respect, pitched a great ninth inning to shut down Toronto and win that series. So I'm curious to see how he looks. Logan Gilbert looked really, really good in his start. So maybe the other rookie picks it up. But I just think that there's no way out against this Houston team. Because people were saying, oh, you could have just walked Yordan. Well, if you walk Yordan, then you get to face Alex Bregman. And at that point, you've already brought in your lefty. So now you get to face Alex Bregman against a lefty, who he's better against. And then, oh, congrats, you got past Alex Bregman. Cool, here's Yuli Gurriel. Here's, you know, Trey Mancini. Here's all of these weapons. You can't go past a guy like Jordan and just try to pitch around him and walk him, because he's only the midpoint of that rest of that elite lineup that's got Kyle Tucker. It's got, you know, we've mentioned Jose Altuve and Jeremy Peña, but even going down to the bottom of that lineup, there are hitters all around up and down that lineup, especially when they take Martin Maldonado out for Christian Vasquez to get a little bit more offense later in the games. It's pretty crazy to see. And it's the same thing that everybody's been saying about these Houston teams for so long, is that they just have this elite, elite lineup, and they're finally bringing along the elite starting pitching top off to add on to it, because now you have a series of Verlander. You have a series of, it was Verlander, it was McCullers now, and then Framber Valdez, who have all been great, and that's just a tough series to beat. So I don't think this one makes it back to Houston. I do think that maybe Seattle gets a win today, just because they're hyped up by their fans, and maybe Lance McCullers throws a dud. I don't think this gets back to Houston. I think that Houston's going into the ALCS, but I guess that closes it on that. You mentioned your take on that. Pretty much same exact thing. You said that they were going to sweep. So now we go on to the Guardians-Yankees. It's split at the time of recording. Game 3 is today, once again. That matchup is going to be Tristan McKenzie versus Luis Severino, who Severino was pretty good down the stretch for the Yankees, but in more of a limited role, trying to get his arm back after some injuries that he's been dealing with for a while at this point now. So that one's going to be pretty exciting to see. But so far, there have been some pretty solid games. It's kind of been what we were expecting. The Yankees are the more talented team here, but the Guardians can, you know, pitch their asses off. They keep the games close, and they're just a ton of competitors. They're just going to go out there and grind out at bats, and they might not be great at hitting, but they're going to try their best to put out good ABs and try to get the results there. And I thought that there may have been some potential that we could be seeing a Gerrit Cole blow-up start like he did against the Red Sox in the wild card game. I mentioned this before on Twitter, but it is funny that, like, one of the best pitchers in our league right now, and I do believe that he's one of the best pitchers. I think that there's a lot of belief that he's super overrated and stuff like that, but I do believe he does put his money where his mouth is a lot of the time, you know, when it kind of matters. But it is funny that his one kryptonite pitching for one of the most high-profile teams in the league is that he cannot pitch against the Red Sox, their biggest rival. It's just the funniest thing to me that the one team that is his kryptonite is the team that Yankees fans essentially think that you pay him all that money to face. So that's always been really funny to me. But I kind of thought that there might have been potential for a blow-up start here. Stephen Kwan hit a home run in the third, and then they loaded the bases. But credit to Cole, he got out of it and then, you know, completely shut him down for the rest of the game, allowing that Yankees offense to kind of pick it up. And then Anthony Rizzo hits the big two-run shot, and that's it for that game. And then game two was postponed, moved to the 12:30 slot, 12:30 1 p.m., which is crazy slot for a Friday morning, a Friday afternoon game. Shane Bieber was great. I believe the broadcast called him Justin Bieber early, which is like, we're deep enough into Shane Bieber's career that we don't make this mistake. And Bob Costas has been around baseball long enough that he shouldn't make that mistake. But it was funny. They were bringing up the sideline reporter for the game. I forget who it was, so sorry about that. But they mentioned, they asked the booth if they could name a Justin Bieber song for $10. And Ron Darling, Mets legend Ron Darling, shout out the Gary Keith Ron booth, immediately said, without any hesitation, immediately said Yummy, which is an hilarious cut to pull out of Justin Bieber's discography. As far as all of the, like, hits he's had, all of the big songs he's had, whether you think he's good or not, he has about, like, 15 songs that are instantly recognizable because of how much radio play they got. And he chose Yummy.
So. Yeah, I gotta love it. It definitely harkens back to the fun days in the Mets booth. I'm glad that Ronnie was able to pull that out here. Maybe Ron's just into it.
Maybe, but man, We'll go back to the game, but man, Bob Costas is just, I think at this point his voice is more settled for like a 4 p.m. primetime game in April. It's not a playoff voice anymore. Like, maybe he can get the big moments a little bit, but everything else leading up to it is just so boring for him. And it's just like an exciting Yankee Stadium crowd that's going off, and then he's just so deadpan. He sounds like me kind of right now. So early in the morning, but I don't know. I don't think that he might be entering washed territory.
He's just got that like story voice, and it's hard to ramp up from that, I think, you know.
I saw somebody on Twitter say that he seems like he's trying to be like a Vin Scully, but he just doesn't have Vin Scully's like magnetism and charisma. It's like he got the lesson that he got from Vin Scully was just that you have to tell old stories from old baseball and then people will love you. But that's not why people liked Vin Scully. They liked him because he had a generally magnetic personality and was able to carry one-man boots. But enough about broadcasting. Back to the game. In the first inning, Giancarlo Stanton hit an absolute tank. He's one of maybe like four or five people in the world that can hit this kind of home run where it's an outside fastball, and then it doesn't even look like he puts a ton of effort into swinging, and it just soars. And I don't have the exit velo for that ball, but I assume it's a lot is all I'm going to say there. And it was just an oppo swing. And like I said, that's something that maybe Giancarlo Stanton, Yordan Alvarez, probably Aaron Judge. And then after that, I'm not 110% sure who's hitting a ball like that. You know, in the world right now. And then that's pretty much it for scoring for a while. Nestor Cortez was really good for a while, but then Guardians got a run across the board. And then Amed Rosario, Mets legend, once again, hits a solo shot, ties up the game. And then it goes into extras. And we've seen what extra innings look like for the Guardians with their pitching staff. But this one was a little different in that it did not take them five innings to score a game, to score a run. I can't imagine what it would have ended up if they couldn't score in that inning, because this isn't the Rays anymore. If you score one run, I mean, if you don't score a run in the extra innings, the Yankees were probably going to pounce on top of that. But they get two runs in the 10th off of a bloop single, which was always funny to see, by, once again, Oscar Gonzalez. I think I saw from Sarah Langs, which we're rooting for you, Sarah. She was recently diagnosed with ALS, or came out that she was diagnosed with ALS. So we're rooting for you, Sarah. Hope that you can come out on top of that. She's truly a great baseball mind, and I love reading up on her stats. But she mentioned that Oscar Gonzalez is the, I believe he has now the second most go-ahead extra inning RBIs in playoff history, and is only behind David Ortiz, and he has done it in a grand total of four playoff games, which is absolutely funny to see. And then at the end of that bullpen, Emmanuel Clase pitches 2 1/3 innings, only gives up one hit, one walk, and strikes out two. Emmanuel Clase going for a 7-out, not a save because he got the win, but essentially a 7-out save, held the tie, and then got the lead. And that man is insane. I don't know how they handle the bullpen for the rest of the series, because at this point, if they win out or get to five, that's two or three games in 2 or 3 days. And after using Clase for 2 innings, I'm not sure what his availability is going to look like for the rest of the series. I'm thinking he's probably not available today, available tomorrow then. We've just seen time and time again what this Guardians pitching staff can do. And I think that that's what keeps this series close. I think that if there's any series, other than Dodgers Padres, because both of those teams are really, really good, and at this point evenly matched with how much they face each other, if there's any series that could go five and could see the upset, it's this one.
Yeah, I mean, this one's just tough. It's because your strengths are just opposites. You know, your strengths are pitching on one side, hitting on the other. And not that the Yankees have bad pitching, but it's just that's where you're going from. And it's interesting to see, you know, it's the battle of both sides. Just as an aside, that exit velo for the Giancarlo home run, was 105 miles per hour.
So it, that it doesn't looked even like feel it should like have been crazy. About 210.
That doesn't even feel that crazy. He had a home run a few weeks ago at the end of the season against the Rangers that was 113 miles per hour. So I don't know, but it's just nuts.
Yeah, well, that one probably wasn't hit to the opposite field either. So
probably not. No, that one was pulled. Yes. So yeah, I don't know. I love Baseball Savant.
Sponsor us.
I don't know. I just don't see Cleveland pulling this one out, but as we said, you know, like, I don't know, you get Tristan McKenzie today. He's really good, you know, and then you have really good pitching there. So I don't know if the Yankees, you know, Judge is going to continue to struggle, and I hope he doesn't, future Met Aaron Judge doesn't struggle. But I don't know. Wait, I think it's hard to say that Cleveland's going to win this one, but their pitching is really good. So who knows?
Yeah. I don't think he struggles. I mean, I don't think he continues to struggle for much longer. I think that he breaks out in one of these games in Cleveland. And I hope he does. Because I mean, obviously you don't want to watch a series where the Yankees are playing and Aaron Judge doesn't have it going, because I mean, that offense, like, it's not bad. It's obviously not bad because they won so many games. But, like, aside from Aaron Judge, it's not incredible.
Yeah.
You know, it's not world-breaking. Aaron Judge is kind of what makes it world-breaking. And I want to go back to my earlier point. I did mention earlier that this is one of the only series that I could conceivably see an upset. I'm realizing now as I thought about it, because I talked so effusively about the Phillies, that maybe this is the Seattle Houston is the only series that couldn't conceivably have an upset. So flip what I just said earlier about a 5 or so minutes ago. But yeah, I think to kind of put a bow on the Guardians and Yankees series, I think it's going to continue the way it is. You're not going to see like a 10-5 game or something like that. I think you're going to see like 4-3, 3-2, you know, probably not any like 1-0, but something along those lines. And I think if you're Cleveland, you just hope you can maybe get to another Bieber start, whether it be on short rest or anything like that. If you can get to another Bieber start, I really like their chances. But overall, I do think that the Yankees are going to win this one.
Yeah. Justin Bieber needs to get out there.
Absolutely. But before we close out this podcast, I want to do a quick little update on the brackets that we filled out.
Don't do mine. Did I get everything wrong?
So you picked St. Louis, you picked the Mets, you picked the Jays, and you picked the Guardians. So hey. you were 1-for-4.
Woo!
But one of your misses was also your World Series pick.
Yeah, that's true.
So your ALCS is, your CSs are mostly intact, once again, except for the Mets. But I mean, there's not much way you can now win this bracket, I guess, if we're going a bracket style championship between us two. There's not much way you can win this one because you lost your champion on,
you're gonna
on
ride
essentially Houston weekend to the one.
Win. You're gonna ride Houston to the win, so
yeah. This is like when I picked Virginia to win it all in that one bracket that they lost to UMBC. And that was one of the first brackets that I like started putting money into. Like I started entering like bracket challenges just for like $5 or $10. And then I don't know why I'd still do them now if that was my first experience putting money on a bracket challenge. But I guess that's just how March Madness works. But for me, I got Philly right. I got Seattle right and the Guardians right. I missed the Mets, but even then I was kind of right. Because I said they were gonna jump on one of Scherzer or DeGrom. I think 7 runs in 5 innings counts as jumping on Scherzer. Where I went wrong was that I thought that Chris Bassett would step up, and he didn't. He struggled in that game, so I'll take the L on that one. But I also had the Dodgers reaching out of that series. If the Padres pull off the upset, that could be where a huge wrinkle is thrown into my thing, because I do have the Dodgers in the World Series. But yeah, I guess that does it for our brief update on the postseason bracket. If you have any other points to lay out before we wrap up this podcast, floor is now yours.
I just still in mourning, but I'm glad that I'm bouncing out, and now I'm just terribly anxious about the off season and terribly anxious about an NL East team making it to the World Series right now.
Well, I hope you put out a little bit of time in your day to actually enjoy some baseball in between that anxiousness, because we got 4 games of baseball today, and that's going to be really exciting. Anywho, I think that does it for episode 2 of the Ball 5 podcast. Once again, we thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening, and hope you stick it out. We had a little bit of audio issues, like I said, because of recording when we did. Had to get a little creative on where our setups were. But I think we generally managed it. Literally, as I mentioned, that you probably heard my dog, move around and stuff. But yeah, I mean, we're 2 episodes in. We didn't think to splurge on these soundproof studios yet. So bear with us while we get to that point. But yeah, like I said, I think that does it for episode 2. Hope you guys enjoy all the baseball coming up this weekend, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of playoff baseball as well. See you guys next week.
Peace out.